Welcome to Halacha in a Year, where we can get to learn all the most relevant halacha through the prism of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. You are listening to Rabbi Yaakov Tramp. This shiur is kindly sponsored by the Moshe Group, NCA, in Zuchus of Rivka Bela, Bas Nechama Shifra, and in honor of Rabbi Tramp. Today we're going to be learning Siman Yud Gimel, the 13th chapter in the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, and the topic is the holiness of the shul. This is a short siman, and we're going to deal with three basic concepts. Number one is behavior in a shul or sanctuary. Number two is entering the sanctuary or the shul. And number three is eating, drinking, and sleeping in a shul. So let's take a look at our first concept. Our first concept is the behavior in the shul. A background to this is the Torah tells us in Vayikra Perek Yud Tes Pasuk Lamed, Umikdashi Tiro, you shall fear my sanctuary. That is referring to the Mishkan, the tabernacle, the first sanctuary that the Almighty commands of the nation of Israel. And therefore, we have a specific commandment to show specific awe and reverence to the Mishkan. However, included in that is every shul. And that is because as Yechezkel describes, the nation of Israel going into Galus, as the Beis Hamikdash is being destroyed, as the nation is entering into the diaspora reality where they will no longer have access to the Beis Hamikdash, the Yechezkel tells us, Vo'ei Elohim leMikdash Ma'at, that I will be to them as a small sanctuary. What does that mean? The Gemara explains, Eile Bata Kinesios Ubata Medrashios, this refers to the shuls and the study halls of Israel. And this has been the movement away from the centralized location of the Mikdash to the decentralized location of Mikdashim and Bate Medrash and Bate Knesset of shuls and study halls around the Jewish diaspora. And therefore, they share many of the similar halachas. Let's take a look at a few questions. Four questions on this first concept is, how does this regulate my speech? So one may not speak mundane matters in a shul. What is a mundane matter? It means anything not related to a mitzvah. Now, that it should be obvious that things like evil speech, negative speech, lashon hara, should obviously be excluded. But we're talking about even just basic mundane conversations, politics, sports, weather, air conditioning. Those are all dvarim betelim. These are all mundane speeches. Included in this as well is business calculations as well. One is not allowed to make business calculations or deals in shul. Although shul is one of the great places where everybody gets to spend time with each other, that can be done in the lobby, at the kiddush, outside shul, but the actual shul itself is a sanctuary which has great holiness, and that holiness cannot be interrupted or disturbed by these mundane conversations. The exception to this rule is conversations about calculations and business of tzedakah. People are getting together to release a captive. People are getting together to raise money for a family in need. That can be worked out and fundraised and consolidated in a shul. How does the holiness relate to the way I treat the actual building itself? So one needs to ensure that the shul is clean and that there are candles, that means to say sufficient lighting in the sanctuary. And today that requires quite a business. So that means to say having a shul which has a staff, having people who are going to take care, who are volunteers or employees to ensure that the shul is kept, polished, floors are clean, air conditioning, heating, all these things go into the basic needs of a shul, and therefore that also costs money. That's what part of membership is ensuring that there are those who will take care of things like billing, making sure the shul is organized, orchestrated, there's signage, making sure all these details are part of the requirement of looking after a shul as well. But what happens if I'm not the janitor? So how does this affect me? So one is paying for the shul that one uses. Somebody once said to me, wait a second, I'm a member of a couple of shuls. Why should I pay for this shul? So I said, you have to pay for every shul you use. Meaning if you're coming every single day and you're using it, then that means to say you should be paying for it because there's upkeep. It requires a lot of money to run a modern facility these days as well. But on a more basic level as well, that means to say that one has to be careful to clean one's shoes before coming into shul, to clean one's clothes. One's not dropping mud, snow, things into the actual shul itself as well. And in the old days, the floors were not made of wood or of stone. They were made of dirt, and people would spit in shuls. That would be accepted common practice in any place, any location, one would cover it. Today, that's not acceptable, and therefore that is no longer permitted as well. But what this does mean to say is that if one sees a tissue lying around, siddurim lying around, it is one's responsibility to take the initiative and clean that up. That is actually a mitzvah in and of itself. What about children in shul? So children are wonderful to come to shul to educate about shul. If all they're going to do is make a noise, then that's not appropriate to bring them yet to shul. It needs to be something that they can learn and watch those who are around them and see what the proper treatment of a shul is. There's one halacha which people are not familiar with about children in shul, and that is that a parent is not allowed to kiss their child in shul. This to a lot of people is very counterintuitive, because when they bring their children to shul and they go, and the child, let's say, goes and kisses the Torah or holds a siddur and does something, the parent feels such a sense of endearment to the child, they want to just go ahead and kiss them. But in the shul, it's a place of moira'ah, of yira'ah, of awe. And therefore, it is important and imperative that one's fear and love and commitment is specifically to Hashem and is paramount in the sanctuary. And therefore, one cannot be displaying love to another being, even one's own child, in the sanctuary as well. One can certainly pat them on the head and hold them, and that's totally fine. But not kissing a child in the actual shul as well. If this is the degree of gravitas, if this is the degree of respect needed to be shown to a sanctuary, this obviously should speak to many other activities which people do unknowingly in shul as well. Our second concept is how to enter into a shul. A shul is a holy place, and therefore we cannot treat it as we would in any other mundane location. So, three basic questions in this section. Number one is, when is one not allowed to enter a shul? One is not allowed to enter a shul to escape the rain or the heat, meaning to say, and this is not the lobby, this is referring to the actual sanctuary itself. In the old days, the shul would be a one-room building, and that would be it. So we're talking about the actual sanctuary itself, but let's say it's raining, one wants to get out of the rain, using a shul. The actual sanctuary itself is not appropriate to escape to. What about just to call my friend? I wanted to tell him that I'm going somewhere, or I left my cell phone in the shul. In those cases, one is not allowed to just enter the shul for that. That's considered a mundane purpose. One would have to go in, sit down and learn a Mishnah or say a Pasuk, and then go call one's friend or find the item that one lost. However, one cannot just enter in to shul. What happens if I can't learn? I don't know a Pasuk or Bahar, I can't find a Seder. In that case, one should just take a moment to sit down for a few minutes, and that, or even moments, because sitting in a shul is itself considered a mitzvah, and therefore that becomes the main focus, and the secondary one is why I'm getting one's friend as well. Our last concept that we're going to deal with is eating, drinking, and sleeping in a shul. Again, the concept over here is that a shul is like a migdash ma'at, is like a small sanctuary, and therefore I'm not allowed to eat or sleep in a shul, even just a snack, even just a nap as well. This happens to be that it is related very much to a very complicated debate in the Gemara. The Gemara has describes that one is not allowed to eat or drink or sleep in a shul. The Gemara also points out that the Bate Knesios Shebebavel Altnai Heim Asuyim are made on condition. And the Gemara relates various instances in which different of the sages of the Gemara would treat a shul with great deference, not entering it because of the rain. But there are descriptions about certain Amoraim eating in a shul. So the question is how to synthesize all of those. It happens to be a very interesting debate between the different Rishonim, Rashi and Or Zaruah, on the one hand, and the Rambam on the other hand, a three-way dispute as to how this exactly works. There are those who are very, very machmir and suggest that the tanai, that the condition on which a shul is made, only helps once the shul is actually destroyed. But when a shul is in existence, it cannot ever be used for personal use. Just the one extreme. The other extreme is that it is when it is made in al-tanai, one can do whatever one wants. And the middle approach, which is the Ramban, is that when it's al-tanai, when the shul is made on condition, that it can have personal use in cases of dire need, that is all right. And so that's a three-way dispute between the Rishonim, between the medieval commentators, and it is Paskin in the Shulchan Aruch, the middle opinion, like the Ramban, that in a case of dire need, one is allowed to use a shul. So what is a case of dire need precisely? How does that work exactly? In practical terms today, there are different ways of explaining this. The Igros Moshe explains, based on the Mishnah Berurah describes this as well, is that when there are needs, let's say a Seudas Mitzvah, which is specifically as considered a Torech for the Shul, and that will be allowed as well. However, it's worthwhile noting that in many Hasidic places, many Hasidic shtibbles, the practice has become to go to a further degree and not consecrate a shul as a shul to avoid people misusing a shul. So many chassidish shtibbles are designated not to be a shul, just a place to daven without the halachas of a shul, because God forbid that a person should misuse a shul. What that does is it does relieve the usage of the shul, which is why many chassidic shtibbles, which are usually one-room establishments, you know, many things happen in those rooms and people are eating and sleeping and all kinds of things. However, at the same time, it means to say that it's also voided of the kedusha of a base knesses. So it's a complicated business. When, let's say, there's a shiva brachos in a shul, in the actual sanctuary, or there is a bar mitzvah, those would be allowed to be attended in the Ashkenazic tradition. In the Hasidic tradition, it's a little more flexible because of the nature of the way they were built. Very interesting and complicated discussion. This is the Kitzur is are hinting towards this, but doesn't go into the full depth of this as well. And that's why, what about if I'm using the shul for mitzvah? So if one is sleeping, says the Kitzur, in the shul for mitzvah, let's say on the night of Yom Kippur, where the practice would be that people would stay in the shul all night, say Tehillim, learn Mishnayos, and fall asleep in the shul, that would be allowed in that circumstance. If one's eating in a shul because of a mitzvah, so for instance, there's a Seudas mitzvah, then one is allowed to eat in the shul. However, that's as long as it will not lead to levity and just frivolity. What about those who learn in shul all day? So people, let's say, are Torosa Umunosoi. Their Torah is their livelihood and their sustenance. So people learning in a base medrash, and that's the circumstance, are allowed to eat and drink, and even to put their head down for naps, because having to go home would minimize the amount of learning they're doing. But that obviously refers to people who are using the base knesses, the base medrash, in such a fashion, not just for anybody who decides they want to as well. If a majority of the time one's spending in shul is napping or eating, then that's certainly not the person that we're referring to over here. And there are, the Kitzur points out at the very end of the siman that there are many halachas as surrounding building a shul. These are found in the Shulchan Aruch Or HaChaim, the siman Kufnun Aleph Kufnun Beis. And therefore, a Talmud Chacham should be asked about these things before planning out the shul. The types of windows, how many windows, the height, the doors, the mechitza. There are a lot of very interesting and fascinating halachas which relate to this. And therefore, a Talmud Chacham, a sage, should be consulted not once the architect has finished the plans and then there's a retrospective question, but at the a priori, at the very beginning, how do we do this? It's not just about how pleasing it is to the eye, but how halachically significant this is when one plans this out as well. A lot of very, very fascinating halachas, of course, summarized here because we are learning the Kitzur. But this hopefully gives us a little bit more of a sensitivity to the beautiful significance and holiness of shuls and batei knesses and batei medrashos. Have a wonderful and meaningful day.